So the big question is this: how are real estate investors who don't have a ton of free time, don't have access to off-market deals, and didn't start life on third base, how do we grow a real estate business conservatively to support our families, finally leave the corporate rat race, and build a legacy? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answers. I'm Ed Matthews, and this is Real Estate Underground.
This is the Real Estate Underground podcast show number 32. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Real Estate Underground podcast. This is Ed Matthews. I am really excited about today's show. We are joined by Mitch Steven. He basically occupies the space that when I first started out in real estate, I wanted to grow up to be. He has done well over, 2,000 houses now. He's raised tens of millions of dollars and is as accomplished a real estate investor as you're going to find in this country. So, Mitch, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for your time today.
That was a pretty tall order to fill. So, you know, My Life in 1,000 Houses, that title came out in 2008 with my first book. As you can see, I've written about six now. But we're up over 3,000 houses these days. But who's counting?
Oh, my goodness.
Who's counting, Ed? Who's counting?
I know I am.
And I specialize in buying houses with other people's money and then selling those houses on a wrap mortgage.
Yep.
So I borrow money. I borrow 50% of what the house is worth from a private lender for 15 years at 8% interest, if you have to know.
Right.
And I sell it at 10% interest for 30 years. The payment is equal to about what the rents are in the neighborhood. So it really doesn't matter the interest rate or my price. The person owns this house for the same monthly payment, as they're going to get nothing if they rent across the street.
Right.
Of course, the rents will go up. This payment is fixed for 30 years. There's no balloons. And the only separator is, do they have a down payment that will satisfy me, which is 10% or more?
Okay.
And do I like them, or do I think they're going to make it? You know, it's not really whether I like them or not. I don't really not trying to be friends with them. I just want to know. I just don't want to take people's money if I don't think they're going to own a house at the end of the day, you know, because
right.
that would be.
Right. Yeah. You're setting people up to succeed, not fail. Right.
Right. These people work hard for this money, just like everybody else. It's, and $10,000 or $15,000 or $25,000 is a lot of money to anybody, but to these people, it's maybe everything they ever saved in their whole life.
Yeah, you know, it's the world, right? So how did you get into this business? What drew you to real estate?
It was the last thing left, man. Ed, I had failed at everything else there was. There was nothing left. If this didn't work, I was going to jump off a building.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So, you know, I bought a condo to live in, an efficiency one-bedroom condo that I was a bartender, and a guy across that I was serving drinks to said he wanted to sell it. And I said, how much? And I said, I don't have that much. And he said, well, if you give me, you know, $3,000 down, I'll finance the other $20,000. And I said, well, hell, that's less than I pay in rent.
Right.
I'll own it, you know, even with the condo fee. So I bought it. And then another one came up across town, and it was a two bedroom with a sunken living room and a fireplace.
Yep.
And I did the math. And if I rented out, my place that I was living in now, and I rented out the other room in the two bedroom, I would be owning two condos and getting paid about $50 a month to own the two places. After it was all said and done, I'd make about $50. Of course, it didn't turn out that way because rentals never do.
Right. Always a curveball.
But I saw the propensity of the math and I did it. And then while I was doing this with the two places, the market turned and people made me offers and I sold both of them. And in 1976, about 23 years old, I had $45,000 in the bank account. And it was more money than I'd ever seen in my entire life. And damn it, I was rich and I needed to figure out how this happened.
Absolutely.
So I went back to review and it happened because of real estate. And I thought, well, maybe I better look into it. Then several Carlton Sheets and Dave Dildato and a whole bunch of old timers, none of y'all would even know their names, Jack Miller and all those guys. I started listening to them. And one day I walked into a Ron LeGrand seminar and I walked out and was never the same man again.
Yeah. Yeah. Ron has that effect on people.
Well, it wasn't just him. It was finally, it wasn't just me in the TV or me in the cassette tape.
Right.
It was me and the speaker and 150 other people that at lunchtime were confirming that this shit works.
Yep, indeed.
It was the confirmation from other people who had spent the money that was really more valuable than Ron, because Ron was the salesman. Ron was trying to separate me from my money. I knew that right away.
Right.
I knew that before I went.
But he's pretty open about that, right? I mean, what does he say? I'm not, you think I'm here to sell you something and I will not disappoint you, I believe is his go-to phrase, right?
Yeah. And Ron and I now, you know, we have each other on the phone. He called me up the other day and surprised me and said, I'm at a conference. There's about 300 people here. I decided I wanted to talk to you. Do you have a second? So we're talking live on this audience. You know what I mean?
That's great.
Well, I guess where I was going with that was it's really great when your heroes become your friends. You know what I mean?
Right. Absolutely. And in terms of breaking down, you know, I wouldn't say complex, but definitely they say real estate is straightforward, but not easy, right? And someone like Ron or Carlton Sheets, who I actually bought his infomercial back, wow, it's got to be 25 years ago. They had a knack for making the seemingly complex very simple and easy to follow.
Yeah, well, that kind of pissed me off too, because my first book was about, all right, this is what happens after the freaking seminar. They didn't tell you about this shit. Right. You know, and this is all the stuff that you learn while you're out there, you know, like, damn, I about lost my huevos on that transaction because they didn't tell me about the downside of the problems. They just showed me big checks and good looking women standing next to Lamborghinis and crap, you know, so,
right.
You know,
right.
In my first book, I went through, it's called Failing Forward to Financial Freedom. I mean, I had people ask me, are you sure you want to put this book out? Because you're not looking too bright here, Skippy. You're not looking too good. I said, well, I made it through it, and it's the truth of what happened, so I don't really see that the truth could be detrimental to me or the person reading the book. As a matter of fact, it might actually help somebody from really screwing up. Because the problem is, if you don't go into this business with a coach, you're really taking the risk that you're not going to learn in time to figure the business out, and you're going to go under, and then you're going to cross it off your list. You're going to have a very bad taste in your mouth, because it almost happened to me. I almost quit this business. I had to hire a coach for the last $10,000 I had. In 1997 or six. Yeah, something like that. I'm trying to remember the year, but it doesn't matter. I was trying to get him to get me out of 25 rent houses without losing my good name and my good credit, because I always had good credit and always had a good name. And I was very worried about that. And he showed me how to stay in the business by seller financing the houses and getting rid of all the liabilities and just keeping the money. And I actually ended up staying in a business I paid a guy to help me get out of, but he showed me a different way. And this is almost 30 years later, and millions and millions and millions of dollars in my pocket later. That's what a coach was worth to me. That 10 grand was worth a lifetime, a 30-year decade career to me, is what that guy earned me. I mean, my 10,000 earned me.
And I'll tell you something that I respect out of people like you and some of the other mentors that I've had, they pay it forward, right? I tell our students at CT RIA, you know, we're all reading the same book. I'm just a few chapters ahead of you. And to have someone, a coach, a mentor, whatever you want to call them, to be able to, first off, talk about, here are the 19 ways you're about to screw up, and here's how to fix them. And here's how to take advantage of that so that you don't do it ever again. And you actually grow your business. That is invaluable. I tell people all the time, I don't need a cheerleader. My mom thinks I'm great. I need people to tell me the truth, right?
Yeah. I have 21 objections when you're talking to a private lender about lending your money. There's 21 objections. The only objections I've ever heard. If you learn the answer to the 21 objections, you have a much higher chance of getting a yes in time before you get so many no's you quit.
So let's start talking about your books. I love the concept of failing forward and learning from your mistakes, right? I mean, I'm a huge believer in mistakes are just lessons. That's all they are. Tell me about that and tell me about your philosophy on failing forward.
Hey, well, I didn't know it at the time, but I was trying to figure out how to accept failure. How am I going to, because I was just coming around to the idea that, you know, there is no success without failure. True. So where do I put that? I was deathly afraid of failing because chances were I didn't have any money. I was going to fail with someone else's money. And that scared the living crap out of me.
It should.
I'll lose my money. I don't care. Lose your money. I'm sick to my stomach. You know, I got to make that phone call.
Right.
I got to tell you that all that talking I did apparently was bullshit.
Yeah. It turns out I didn't know what I was talking about. Right.
Yeah. That petrifies me. Petrifies me to this day.
That keeps you sharp, right?
Yeah. You know, it's the reason why I don't have houses all over the country, because it's all with private money. On the first of every month, I write a check to pay about 69, 70, 71, I don't know, individuals on $26 million that I borrowed at 8% for 15 years that I sold at 2X at 10% for 30 years. Okay. So if I got this all over the country and then the fit hits the shan,
right?
I'm spread way too thin. But if it's all in my hometown or contiguous counties, I got the crews. I know the culture. I can pick up the phone. I can handle everything from my war room. I can get it all done, right? Like that. You know what? Maybe more like the Alamo, but I'll give them a hell of a fight. You know what I mean?
Right.
So what I was doing in that first book, I developed a theory called the moat theory. And what I was going to do, I was going to solve the problem by putting money in different buckets. And the very first bucket I had to fill was enough deals in this bucket to bring in $3,500 a month so I didn't have to have a job. And that if I didn't bring in a dime, all my overhead was covered. My condo payment, my insurance, the condo fee, the electricity, the water, the car, the insurance, it was all covered.
Smart.
And this is how I rationalized to fail forward. So now that my overheads, and I call it the moat theory because I had a castle with everything it took to survive in it. Right. And then once I got the $3,500 coming in, I would put a moat around that castle and those investments, and I would never risk the money that was coming in across that moat to pay for everything, because there's how I'm going to fail forward. I will never sleep in the rain. I will never sleep in the cold. I'll always have something to eat. I'll always have this very basic standard of living. It's not rich and it's not wealthy. It's not very impressive, but damn it, I can sit here for a long friggin' time and not die.
Right.
Now, every dollar I make over that bucket is in a different bucket. This is in the R&D bucket, the research and development bucket. And I had to come to terms with myself. This money is to be spent, and it may not come back in the form of money. But if I spend it, if it doesn't come back in the form of profit, then I have to be happy to accept that it's coming back in the form of knowledge, experience, and growth, and that it's okay. It's okay to lose or to watch the excess money go out. But then I figured, how many times will I leave that castle, the comfort of that castle, without risking the assets that pay for it? How many times will I drop the drawbridge, charge out with my R&D money, $10,000, $12,000, $8,000, try something on a property or try those theories I read about? How many times would I fail? I might fail once and come back, pull up the drawbridge. Everything's fine and paid for here. Start saving up for some more, for another attack. Get some more money, drop the drawbridge, go back out. How many times am I going to fail? Eventually, I'm going to figure it out. And so I gave myself permission to fail and come back. I just didn't give myself permission to gamble or to leverage the assets that paid for the place that I had to go to heal.
Right on.
Because failing's not bad. But when you fail so bad that you lose your house, you lose your car, you lose your wife, you lose custody of your kids, when you fail that bad, it's hard to come back. And emotionally, you're crushing your confidence, just right. Crushing it. And that was the biggest thing was I didn't mind failing. I just didn't want to fail so bad or get myself in a position that my confidence was destroyed. Because without confidence, you have nothing. I was trying to protect my confidence and my pride. And so that's one of the things. I have a seventh book coming out. This is going to be one of my favorite books because like the first book is a story of how I did. It's not so much a how-to. The rest of the books are kind of how-to. They're much drier.
Yeah.
I try to make them fun with case studies and my sense of humor and all that. But at the end of the day, the first book was an autobiography about how a dumbass figured out how to buy 100 houses a year for 27 years straight.
Wow.
Plus or minus.
Yeah.
So this next book, everyone really liked the stories at the end of that book. And at the end of the book, there's 18 stories that I wrote about things that happened to me that I'm not smart enough to make up while I was in this business.
Right.
Well, everyone loved those stories. They're short, they're sweet, they're little Reader's Digest compacted little stories. And you can probably get a lesson out of them. I'm not going to tell you what it is. If you don't get the lesson out of the story, then you either weren't ready or it wasn't that good a story. Some people commented on that. So this book is called My Life in 1,000 Houses. Random thoughts and stories from a serial house flipper. And I'm just anything that comes to my mind that was unique or funny or sad or tragic or great that happened to me that I didn't talk about in the last book, I'm writing in this book. So I'm looking forward to that. Anything from adverse possession to a chapter called Skyscrapers and Pyramids. You know, you can keep building skyscrapers with debt, but when the storm hits, they're going to topple. Right. Every now and then when you get a skyscraper, you know, you got to sell off the top half to pay off the bottom half and expand the base. Because you know what? Pyramids don't blow over in the storm. They just right. don't.
Right.
Now, they don't look as pretty. The view's not as nice from a pyramid, okay? Because when you have that pyramid, man, I own 27,000 doors and I'm worth this much money. Well, when you cut it in half and pay the tax and then pay off the other half, your numbers on that paper have dropped. Your net worth on paper is not the same. It's just almost indestructible is the point. Because if you convert a skyscraper into a pyramid, if you take 100 houses and sell off 50 and pay off the 50, it's the same cash flow. It's the same cash flow because right, 100 debt is the same as 50 with no debt.
Right.
But it doesn't look as good on paper. You can't say you own 100 of anything now. You only own 50. You're not worth 10 million anymore. You're only worth five.
However, free and clear is a beautiful thing, right?
Yeah, but the skyscraper builders never put in the quotient for risk.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm a pyramid builder.
It's going to go on forever.
I will cut that skyscraper in half every time. When I have the debt and then the market changes and I can sell these for top dollar, I will every time sell the top half to pay off the bottom half. And I don't give a shit what my financial, if it went down $5 million. I don't give a shit about that. What I'm trying to build is I'm trying to build something you can't take away from me.
Cash flow.
Short of a nuclear bomb.
Right.
Good Lord wants to take something away from you. Guess what?
It's going to happen, right?
It's going to go away. So it's not going to be my fault. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
So I'm going to do everything I can to shore it up.
So what I'm hearing is as you grow your assets, you're looking to lop off the top half to pay off the bottom half to create same cash flow, but now it's indestructible. That's what I heard.
Very good analysis, but I'm always looking to the next recession.
Right.
I'm looking at it like it's coming in 6 months, all day long, every day of my life. It's coming in 6 months. What do I look like?
Right. And because it is, right? I mean, I think that's the reality of our situation right now.
There is. Now, they don't come every 6 months, but every 6 months, I get myself in different position. I'm doing shit every month. And right. So every 6 months, I'm going, okay, what do I look like now? If right. a recession hit tomorrow, is this good? Because I got about 6 months to get out of it, this right. position.
So let's talk about how you grow that pyramid once you sell off and pay off the bottom 50%. Let's talk about private lending.
Well, the only way I like to build my pyramids now is with private lending. But you have to look at the terms that I borrow with.
Okay.
Right now, I have $26 million that I'm going to owe payments on at the first of every month. Okay. That didn't happen overnight. And you don't need $26 million. If you're starting out, shoot, a couple of $100,000.
Right.
Depending on what part of the country you live in.
Sure.
Price of properties. But you know what I mean? $100,000 can solve your problem for many, many deals in a year. And you don't have to do up. I'm almost 30 years in the business. I'm 61 years old. Don't compare yourself to me. You don't need to do 100 deals to be a big, big, big winner. Huge winner. You know what I mean? You don't have to. And, you know, I do 100 deals, but I also have a team I have to support. So.
Right. Yeah, it all comes with it. Right. But I think your initial point was important, creating that moat, right? Creating that moat around your life so that, you know, financially you're solid. There's nothing that the world can throw at you that you can't handle because you've got it all paid for.
The biggest mistake that the newbies make, heaven forbid, they make $100,000 on their first transaction. I've seen it happen. It's been the worst thing that ever happened to these guys, you know?
Right. Because it's easy.
As soon as they get a little jingle in their pocket, they're buying the bigger house, they're buying the boat and the jet skis and everything. And it's like, well, I didn't. I stayed in the same house for 10 or 12 years. I didn't increase my overhead much of anything because if I was going to increase my overhead, then I would have to increase the amount of assets in that bucket that was going to pay for it every month.
Right.
Because I still, to this day, I could fail. And I'm worth a lot of money today, a lot of right. money. You know, right. but it doesn't matter how much you're worth. You get cocky, you start thinking you know it all. You stop watching your money or your employees or your team or whatever. You stop paying attention. Watch what happens. It goes away.
Quickly.
Yeah. They ought to rename money. Just call it Houdinis. I got 10, 20 Houdinis in my pocket. They're going to disappear like any friggin' minute.
Right.
The biggest problem, though, I was trying to address fear in my first book because I was afraid. So the first thing I learned about fear when I started to study it and analyze it and go back through the things I was afraid of now that I'm not afraid of anymore and start trying to get a handle on fear was that fear is conquered by action. You know, if you're afraid of something, don't run from it. Run right to it. Get nose to nose with it. Figure out what the hell it's made out of. About 90% of the time you figure out that the dragon just shrinks. The fire-breathing dragon that you are so afraid of isn't really that bad. I was afraid of Dodd-Frank when it came out, that 2,500 pages and all that regulation. I was starting to run with everybody else. And I thought, I'm running away from a multi-million dollar business. Hold on. Yeah. Maybe I should go face up nose to nose with this bully and figure out what they really want. And I did.
And here you are.
Now I make more money now than I ever did.
Right.
Because a bunch of people got out of the business.
So you're a coach, and I know that you've mentored people, whether it be through your books or through your coaching program or what. But I'm curious about your mentors. What's the best advice you ever got, and who gave it to you?
Well, it depends on the time of your life, right? Because there's always a revelation. You know, there was a day I could walk into any seminar and be overwhelmed by noon. And then the more experience you get, the more you stay in the industry, the more you learn. Now I go to a seminar hoping that the whole three-day weekend I can find one thing that's going to change
nugget.
My business.
Yeah, I do
one,
the same thing.
Just one.
Yep.
You know, because I know about a lot of the other things. I'm not saying I'm brilliant. I'm not brilliant. The only thing that makes me the expert that I am is just I've been in the same niche for 27 years.
Right.
I'm not really that smart, but I have an aversion to pain and I like pleasure. So everything I do is like, that kind of hurt. Need to stay away from that. Oh, yeah, that felt good. How do I get more of that? And I just kept trying to figure out how to stay away from the pain and hang out with the pleasurable stuff.
Yeah.
And it's pretty much common sense. Although I will tell you, you can tell me how hot the burner is all you want. I'm touching the son of a gun. I'm touching
just
it.
Once.
Sure. No, maybe even twice. I wonder if it burns the same on the right hand as it does on the left hand. Holy shit, it does. They're both the same.
Yeah, it turns out that's true.
I learn good, but I don't learn easy. I learn the hard way.
Okay.
That's how I learn, unfortunately.
Tell me more about that, you know, in terms of lessons and how that's manifested itself in your business. Pick one of those big lessons that you've learned and how it changed your business. I'm curious.
I mean, you have to get back up.
Right.
The biggest thing is self-talk. So a book called Psycho-Cybernetics by Maltz, you know, it's an old book and they have a new version or nonprofit that's keeping that theory going. But once I read that book, I kind of diagnosed myself as this is your problem.
Right.
You're talking shit to yourself every night. When you wake up, your butt can't overcome it because your brain has beaten you up all night long. So you gotta regulate what you're saying to yourself. The person you'll speak to more than anybody in the world by far, without a doubt, is you. You will talk to yourself more than you'll talk to anybody in the world. So if you're not supporting yourself or if you're putting things in negative terms all the time, you don't have a chance in hell. You have to flip your conversation. Instead of saying, man, you're a freaking idiot, Mitch. What a dumbass. You say, all right, we'll see that coming next time. That won't happen again. We're smarter than that. We just got smart. It's okay.
Right.
I can't wait for this to happen again. It's not going to be the same. I'm going to capitalize next time I see it.
Yep.
That's how I talk to myself now.
That's excellent. And, you know, the state you're in, your self-talk, as you say, it's absolutely critical. So do you have some sort of morning ritual that you go through to like affirmations, or is it just a constant positive attitude?
I hate rituals in church, anywhere. With the possibility of singing the national anthem before a football game or the Pledge of Allegiance before class, I hate rituals. Those other two can stay.
Right.
No, I like to do this stuff in real time. If there's something I want to learn, because I'm not really a great reader or learner that way, if there's something I need to learn, like the 21 answers to the 21 objections for the private lenders, I'll put the 21 questions with the answers where I brush my teeth in the morning and in the evening, you know? And I'll read the question and the answer, all 21 of them in the morning, and I'll read them at night. And then after about whenever I think I'm catching on, 3 days, 4 days, one day, whenever, I'll remove the answers and I'll just start reading the questions and answering in my mind. And so those are the kind of things I use repetition for.
Okay.
To beat some kind of process or the six steps or to close somebody on a certain topic or whatever. I'll read those over and over because they just become part of you if you read them enough. It's like a song that you love and that you sing all the time. You never sat down to memorize the words. You just heard the song so many times you can't forget the words.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely.
Are you interested in real estate investing right here in Connecticut? Ever wonder where all those real estate investing pros hang out to network? Did you know the Connecticut Real Estate Investors Association will introduce you to those investors and will help you learn how to find deals, fund those deals, and even teach you how to do it without leaving your current job? go to ctreia.com. That's ctreia.com. And click on the events button to register for an upcoming event. Hope to see you soon.
Buying investment real estate is both thrilling and sometimes stressful. Without a lending expert by your side, most investors don't stand a chance. That's where CTREIA Funding comes in. CTREIA Funding was founded by investors to help investors just like you fund their deals. Whether you're buying a single-family rehab, an apartment building, or really any investment property, our team will understand your deal and help you close quickly. Go to ctreiafunding.com or call us at 860-876-0572.
So I'm curious about one other thing. You know, I mean, you are a master at deal flow and clearly you're a master at raising money. Which one do you think is harder?
It's a catch 22, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's the egg and the chicken thing, right?
Yeah, but if you have to pick, you learn how to find the best deal possible, because depending on how good or bad your deal is, if your deal's really good, it can really help you finding the private money. If you go out and get really shitty deals, then
yeah,
you're making
nothing that's going to help you.
Finding private lenders is going to be even harder. But if you have a really good deal, it can make finding private money almost stupidly ridiculous. Now, okay. I have a course called Private Money Changes Everything. It's pretty inexpensive. I think it's less than $1,000. I mean, if you even raise 50 grand, I don't know, even the tiniest amount of money for your area, pay for itself tenfold, because you can borrow the money, buy something, flip it, and then borrow, you know, pay it back and then borrow it again. I mean, 100 grand could be used
10 times
to buy $1 million worth of deals. Right. You just buy them one deal at a time, liquidate, buy another one, liquidate.
Right.
So, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've recycled $26 million over and over, not because I was flipping, but because people would pay me off, pay my notes off.
Right.
I didn't want them to pay me off, but they would.
Sure.
So I have to go out and do something else again. So definitely finding the deal is because nothing happens without a deal. I mean, it's like the saying in the music industry, it all starts with a song. There ain't a song to sing. Nobody's performing shit.
Right.
You know, so it's the same thing with a house. And that can be taught. If you want to get good at that, take some negotiating classes or hang around some people that know. I mean, just listen to people on how they negotiate. There's hours and hours of tape about negotiating. But then when you go to private money, you almost got to get your head screwed on straight before you even try. Because I can tell you how to do it all you want, but if your headspace isn't right, you're not going to do it.
So say more about that. What do you mean by your headspace?
I've coached a lot of people to raise a lot of private money. I may have the only course in the world that has seller financing as the backdrop. There's all kinds of raising private money for flips and raising private money for apartment complexes and raising private money for rent houses. But I got to talk about my strategy. So I may have the only course that helps you talk to people about borrowing their money with owner financing as the backdrop. But what I hear from these people all the time is limiting beliefs. And we all have them, no matter who you are, me included.
Yeah.
No, you go to one level, you have a limiting belief about the next level. You go to the next level, you'll have a limiting belief about that level. It doesn't matter where you are. So their limiting beliefs are almost always one of these. I don't have any experience in this industry. Why would someone loan me money? I filed a bankruptcy. I have bad credit. You know, no one's going to trust me. I don't have good credit. Why would people loan me money? I'm too tall. I'm too fat. I'm too skinny. I don't speak the English too good. Nobody loaned me no money because I don't speak the English no good. My partner today, Mike Powell, finally figured out what his problem was. You know, his was, I'm 25 years old. I'm talking to people with millions of dollars. I don't even own my own house. Why the hell are they going to loan me the money?
Right.
And to which I finally said, okay, I'm glad we got this out. Because you know what? You pompous asshole. You're giving yourself way more credit to this deal. No one gives a shit about you.
Right.
No one cares about you at all. What they care about is how much am I loaning and what rate of return are you going to give me? And if it doesn't work out like you say, what do I get? So if your pitch is to borrow $75,000 in a first lien position in their credit on a $150,000 house, Charles Manson should have been able to get this money from prison. Didn't matter how many people he murdered. It has nothing to do with you. You're just a guy walking out with a megaphone going, hey, I got a deal over here. Who wants to listen? That's all you are. You're two arms, two legs, and a mouthpiece. That's all you are to the equation. Not very much. So then there's little tricks too. You know, like you have a $200,000 house and you need $125,000 and you've got a retirement plan. why don't you put 50 of the 125 to your retirement? Now you're only looking for $75,000 on a $200,000 house. And you can knock on the doors of the richest people in town. They don't even have to have met you before or even have an introduction. And all you got to do is get enough time to them to say, I have a $200,000 property and I'm trying to buy $75,000 in the first lien position. Do you know anyone I can talk to? If you can get that out of your mouth before they slam the door in your face, they're not going to slam the door.
No, some will, but most won't.
Ah, yeah, but you know.
Yeah.
That's what they make middle fingers for. You know, like next.
Right.
And that's the other thing. So I'm feeling rather spicy today. I'm sorry. I'm not really.
Keep going. Right. No, you're on a roll, my man.
When I get passionate, I go out of bounds sometimes a little bit just in my vernacular and stuff. But I challenge my students, and no one's ever gotten there. No one's even come close. I say, here's your job. You learn the 6-step process. Mm-hmm. You learn how to ask for money without asking them for money. Because the minute you ask someone for money, they get in the box and see. So right. You don't do that. Ask them if they know someone. Same way you poach your competitor's employee. You don't invite them to come over. You say, hey, do you know someone that's as good as you that wants to make more money than you? I never ask your employee to do shit. I just ask them for a reference.
Right.
So I challenge them to get 50 no's in a row. I bet you cannot get 50 no's in a row. Make that your goal. So if you get 10 no's one day, go home and have a beer and celebrate, man. You're 1/5 of the way there.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, no one's ever made it past 10. No one's ever made it past 10, much less 50. You can't. First of all, I wouldn't let them go out the door with a stupid deal, right? I mean, that's part of having a coach. Right. I'm not going to let you go out there and look stupid.
Right.
You know what I mean? So people go, I got this one and, you know, it's worth 100 and I need 90. I said, well, you want to ruin your reputation, go out there with that deal.
Right.
Unless you got about 30,000 out of your pocket, at least, so you can only have to ask for 60, then we need to find a different deal. Right. And that's the other thing. Coaches, you can measure a coach by how much money that they help you make, but you'll never be able to measure a coach by how many lawsuits they kept you out of, how many losses they kept you from having, and how many hours or days or months or years in lawsuits or time they kept you from wasting.
Right. So
you
true.
You can't measure the negative. So, and here's the thing. I'm talking about coaching. I'm not a Millhouse coach. Maybe I take 10 people one-on-one for $25,000, but we're going to have a 45-minute conversation before I even. And in that 45-minute conversation, I am not going to ask you to make a decision that day. I don't want you to make a decision the day that I talk to you. I'm trying to figure out, if you give me $25,000, do I think you're going to see it back?
Right. And then,
and if I don't think you're going to see it back, then we'll talk about doing something else, but not that, because I'm not a Millhouse and I only want to play on a team that I can take to the playoffs and hopefully at least get a chance in the Super Bowl. I don't want to play for a losing team. I don't care how much money you have. Money's not my problem. What I need at 61 years old is I need the emotional gratification of knowing that I helped change someone's life.
Yeah. Contribution, so right?
What?
Contribution. You've already grown. Time to contribute. Yeah,
I have to have a higher power. When you start out, it's all about the money. Believe me, I was all about the money. Then somewhere in the transition, you figure out that money's not going to keep your brother from committing suicide. Money's not going to stop your friend from dying of cancer. No matter how much money you had, it ain't going to work. Having a lot of money can cause more problems than it is actually fun if you don't have your head screwed on straight about that subject. You know what I mean? That money opens up doors that has ruined many and many a people.
Right.
So my job is to not only help you make money, but it's to help keep you out of trouble. Dodd-Frank and state regulations, federal regulations and everything. You know, I'm not a Millhouse anyway. So maybe I'll do 10 people this year.
Yeah.
And they'll have to be the right people.
So I'm curious, if somebody wants to find out about your books or your coaching program or just get to know you, what's the best way to make that happen?
Well, look, you want to talk about the coaching program? Just sure. Call 210-934-6001. 210-934-6001. There's a little recorded message there that explains what I'm looking for and what we're going to do if you want to. And then, you know, you'll be automatically sent a text with an application so we can talk personally for 45 minutes or an hour. So I can figure out, if I was you, what would I do?
Right.
Is it possible? Do I think you have what it takes? Are you in a market that even I think can do what your strategy wants to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is there enough people? I'm looking at all kinds of things. Do I have time? How heavy are you going to be? You know, if you own 100 rent houses, you're a quick study. I don't have to do much. I just got to talk to you about laws in Texas and get you straightened out and introduce you to a lawyer and get you, and you'll be down the road, like, yeah, you know, with an assembly line in no time.
Right.
I don't normally at that level, very rarely will I take anyone trying to do their first deal, because I'm not here for $25,000. I'm not here to see if this business is for you. For $25,000, I'm here to up your game. And if you haven't done a house yet, you don't have a game yet. That's a different level of coaching, not nearly as expensive. Come do that. The one-on-one is for people that have a game, and I think I can up it more than $25,000 in a reasonable period of time. That's what that's.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if you've got $25,000 in your pocket, I'd rather point you to a program that's, you know, $1,000 or $2,000, maybe $3,000, and use the rest of it to go buy your first property.
If you're a new person, absolutely, because absolutely, the last thing I want, and if you have to borrow that $25,000 off a credit card, I'm not doing that.
Yeah,
you know, so I'm not doing that at all, because I'll take that debt as personal pressure on me, because that's the way I am.
Right.
And all the groovies tell me, you know, that's not your problem, but it is to me. So
yeah, well, you like to sleep at night, right?
I want to win.
Right.
And so it's hard to win with a gun to your head.
Right on. So Mitch, I'm curious, when you're not talking about real estate, what else do you like to do?
Let's finish that one thing, or go to 1000houses.com. 1000houses.com. You can go over there, see my 550 podcast archived, 180 YouTubes, 6 books. You can get so sick of Mitch Steven, it's not even funny. Just go to 1000houses.com and you can hang around me till I make you puke. And then, and then when I'm not talking real estate, I'm usually on my ranch in Bigfoot, Texas, which is about 45 minutes south on I-35 from that needle right behind me,
yep,
downtown San Antonio, Hemisphere Tower. I like to hunt hogs. I'm low fence. I have 600 acres. I'm surrounded by sprinkler pivot farm crops, and the hogs have just, they're just a terror. They destroy hundreds and hundreds of acres a month. I like to bring people out there. I like to have bus tours, intimate bus tours with 5, 6, 7 people that will pay $4,000 to $5,000, and we go to my ranch and we get in the shuttle and we go to the storage facilities and to the mobile home and land development I have or whatever, and to my office and talk about how that runs. And then I like intimate settings. I mean, it's kind of a gas to be invited. I've never drawn 300 people myself. I did have a vacation in Mexico where I would just tell people that the resort I'm going to be at and what dates way in advance. And if you want to be there, that's where I'm going to be. That would be the end of that. And then, you know, 150 people would show up, you know, at the end before COVID. And that was fun. But I also like intimate settings because everybody's as unique as a fingerprint. Their whole situation, their personality, where they, it's all in to like really, really, really help people in a 3-day period. We got to get pretty personal. Sure. I got to know a lot of stuff about you. Right. I'm not asking it for my personal gain. If I ask you, how many retirement plans do you have and what does each one have in it? I'm not going after your money. I'm just trying to figure out, if I was you, what are my resources like? What would I do if I were you? Well, in order for me to do that, I got to know a lot about you.
You're helping people get where they want to go by understanding where they are today, right?
Yeah, yeah. I've had people come to me and go, I just inherited $500,000. I want to go in the business. What can I do with $500,000? I said, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to go put it in a CD. We're going to lock it for a year. And we're going to learn how to do it with no money. And if you can learn how to do this business with no money, then you actually have a chance of keeping that $500,000 for the rest of your life.
Right, right.
If you just bring the $500,000 over now, I'm not so sure if you're going to have any of it in a year.
Yeah, maybe two.
Maybe two.
Yeah.
So,
well, Mitch, thank you very much for your time today. It's a pleasure. I've really enjoyed getting to know you. I'm actually looking forward to reading all your books. I'm a book hound myself, so I will be perusing your catalog as soon as we hang up this call. So,
hey, so I tell, you know, I put my phone number in the front of every book.
Yep.
No one ever calls me.
No kidding.
But, you know, I always tell people, I used to have this marketing technique when people would download the first 100 pages of my first book for free. I would get a text with their phone number.
Yep.
And I would call them right away. And sometimes I could hear the 100 pages printing out in their printer in the background. And I said, you know, I just want to say thank you for downloading the first 100 pages. First, you know, they think they act like Brad Pitt or Angelina Jolie or, you know, is calling them. I don't know why. They're starstruck and I have no idea why. But they're very excited that the author, the actual author, is calling. And then I spend a little time, but I never ask to sell them anything, and because I don't want to. I just say, if you ever finish reading this book and want to discuss it, why don't you call me? My phone number is either right now on your phone or it's in the front pages. And every now and then people will call me, and it's a neat experience because I know what I thought I wrote. And then I get to hear what people heard and what they got out of it.
Right.
And sometimes it's night and day.
Yeah.
Sometimes they pick out things that I didn't even pay any mind to at all, just in passing. And it might be the one thing that everyone gets out of that chapter. It's like, holy cow, unbelievable. You know, you get to learn, you know, after a while, you might forget what it's like to be a newbie, and you get to get reacquainted with what their issues are.
Right.
You know, it's been right. 30 years since I've been new. Right. So it's nice to hear back again and go, oh, okay, I got to remember these people are afraid of this, or they got hangups about that a lot, right. You know? All right, man. All right. I appreciate you.
Yeah, same. And thank you very much. It's a pleasure. Congratulations on all your success. Like I said, I'm looking forward to reading your books.
All right. You too. You want to discuss them in real time?
I already have your number, so I'm going to be calling you anyway.
All right. All right, man.
Hey, be well. Thank you very much, Mitch.
This has been the Real Estate Underground Podcast, a CT REIA presentation. Don't forget to rate, subscribe, and share this podcast with your friends. If there's a specific topic you want us to cover, post it in the comments. For more information on the Real Estate Underground Podcast or CT REIA, go to realestateundergroundpodcast.com or ctrea.com. Until next time, happy investing.